a lot of silly on your part.
What? What was I doing?
You were doing so this
adjusting
thing.
My headset. Yes. Just making sure that everything's just right.
Silly mistress is being silly.
That's so common. That's so common. Welcome to the Love Bite.
Welcome.
I am Insidious Muse.
I'm Service Slut.
And we have a fantastic guest
and
in studio.
Super duper way of kicking off the new year.
Right?
In my opinion.
That's true. We have a guest. Ms. Diana is in studio and she's a colleague of ours. She's in a group that we're in of other, you know, like-minded female dominants and submissives. And she is kind of like the matriarch, I would say, of our organization.
Well, let's face it. She's the matriarch of a lot of shit.
She's just the matriarch.
Yeah.
That's what she just changed her name to, the matriarch. Welcome, Ms. D.
Thank you.
We've wanted her to be on for a while because she's probably got the most, you know, depth and breadth of overall knowledge. And she's had, you know, I'm sure she has probably a fantastic tale for how she came into the scene and had to deal with the scene and stuff. And I've always wanted to pick her brains. So what better way to do than on air, right?
Absolutely.
No problem.
You game for that?
I'm game.
Well, to start off, kind of like, you know, you've been in the scene for...
Since dinosaurs roamed the planet.
Okay, well, I was going with like 20 plus years.
30 plus years.
30 plus years. See, wow. That's pretty impressive. Yeah. And 30 years ago, it probably wasn't really welcoming to female dominance.
When I first started in the scene, it was easier to find a back alley abortionist than it was to find kinky people.
Really?
Because, well, even nice people sometimes needed abortionists. But nice people didn't need to be with perverts and bad people and outlaws. I mean, I happen to like being an outlaw, but so it was very difficult. And the organization that I first connected to my second time around, well, let me back up.
All right.
Growing up as I did eons ago, submissive men were not thought of very highly at all. They were weak, they were pansies, they were wusses. And here I am, a strong, independent, you know, really assertive woman. So the last thing in the world I wanted was a submissive man. And I kept attracting submissive men, obviously. I mean, it just kind of bleeds off of me. It's like pheromones. And so... it wasn't until my late teens, and again, I was dating people who were 20 years older than I was because I was born at 150 and I just keep getting younger every year. And I was very lucky. I met a number of submissive men who were smart enough not to use the vocabulary and just came on as really attentive lovers. What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Never came to the door without a flower or a record album or something in hand.
And nice.
Yeah, exactly. So why even vanilla would I want to walk away from that kind of treatment?
Absolutely.
And then eventually it got to be things like, are there any things that I can't say, any words
nope,
that
you
I can't?
Can say okay. Anything you want.
Well, and then they would finally get to the point where, you know, I'd much rather suck than fuck if you don't feel like having hey, you know, laying back and just being done is not bad either. So, you know, so little by little, they kept educating me into letting them serve me and service me. And it grew from there. And then after about, almost 10 years, it was, oh, well, you know, nice people don't do this, been there, done that. Yeah. And I went back to being vanilla for a while.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
A lot of that.
And then Burger King said I could have it my way. And I went, yes, I'm home. And I've been out and about ever since. However, until I retired, my picture was in the dictionary next to the word paranoia twice because... It would have cost me my job. It would have cost me, you know, and eventually, you know, ultimately my house and everything would have been negatively impacted had my alternate lifestyle been known in my vanilla life. So I was very, very circumspect and very, very private. And then after retired and I didn't have to worry about who was going to sign my check, it was, well, fuck it. You know, now I can be what I want to be. I started doing the outreach things that I do at colleges and universities. I couldn't do outreach at colleges and universities because I was in education and a number of my kids were going to the colleges and universities where I'd be speaking. So until I retired, and even for a while right after I retired, I had to be a little careful. But now, they're all probably married and have families of their own. Time is just something that I am often amazed at because it's just such a fluid thing. And and all of a sudden, it's like, you're how old? And then I have to look at my birth certificate and do the math. And it's doesn't compute, you know.
I do that all the time too. I think, and as you know, as we age, I definitely think like, wow, you know, I had an opinion of what 40 would be, and I'm like, I'm not that. So yeah, I completely get that.
Well, from the knees down, I feel it. From the knees up, I mean, nobody believes I'm as old as I am because I'm still out and partying every weekend and traveling and being wicked and loving every minute of it.
Yeah, I think that's what keeps you young.
Probably.
Right?
Probably.
You know? Just, you got to have a good amount of debauchery.
Corrupting the youth of the world.
Educating them. Oh, educating them. Let's go with that.
Okay.
So, you know, would you say that you've kind of done everything that you really wanted to do? Or are there some big things you still want to do?
There was a time in my life when I wanted to try skydiving. I really loved the idea of the free falling.
Yeah.
Landing didn't excite me a lot.
Yeah.
At this point, there's no way it's going to happen. My knees simply would not deal with that very well at all. I mean, unless I skydive into water, I could probably handle that, but that's a whole other ballgame. But yeah, so skydiving is one of the things on my bucket list that's not going to happen. Winning the lottery so far hasn't happened, but I'm not, you know, tossing it out the window. But, you know, I am a blessed child of the universe. I am so lucky. I really don't want to trade places with anybody. I am very happy with my life. I am very happy with the people in my life and around me. Yum.
How great.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
How great.
That's enviable.
It is. It's very enviable. What's this outreach? What are you doing?
Well, there's an organization called the Center for Sex for Positive Sexuality.
Yes,
Positive Sexuality.
With Emily Pryor.
Yes, with Emily. And she contacts a number of the colleges and universities here in Southern California and sets up panels for the advanced human sexuality classes or the psych classes or sometimes even the police science classes where folks need to know the difference between consensual play and spousal abuse.
Wow.
So we have spoken, I have been on panels at Cal Northridge, Cal State Northridge, at Cal Lutheran, at Cal
Really?
Arts.
Cal Lutheran?
Yeah, Cal Lutheran, Cal Arts. And then Olga, who is a sexologist and works down in Orange County, has a number of classes, and I have done panels for Olga at Orange Coast College. I've done panels at Fullerton Community College. I don't remember where else. And some other places around the country. Whenever I've been at a conference, sometimes I will set something up at a college or university. And I've spoken to salons and other private meeting in private homes, interest groups about BDSM.
Okay, and what would you say, are you a subject matter expert of BDSM, or is there a particular subset of which you would consider yourself to be an expert?
You know, I hate taking on the title expert.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit
Have I been
haughty.
Around? Yeah. Have I got the trademarks to prove it? Yeah. Have I done a lot of things? Yes. Do I know how I do it? Do I know how the people I have related to like it? Yes. Am I going to say my way is the only way or that I am the end-all and the be-all of all knowledge
not.
In the community? No. If we're talking about how-to stuff, I have taught how-to classes. But I am much more interested in what's going on between your ears at any level of participation in life than I am in how well you know how to unicycle or, you know, how adept you are in the kitchen. Although I love the idea of having a submissive who's adept in the kitchen.
Right?
You know.
Not me. I like to cook, but that's okay.
So, there's a lot that I know. There's a lot that I am willing to share. Is it all that there is? No. Am I the only? No. Are there areas in this community that I was not a part of in the beginning? Yeah, like the gay male leather motorcycle groups, that clubs that came out of World War II and started this. Have I been impaled on the barricades as many people have? Not so much. I mean, there have been a couple of times when things got a little dicey, but I am not one of those people who had to give up my life in order to come out once or twice. Some people came out, you know, as gay, and then they had to come out again as kinky, and they already had practice, so it was much easier, you know. They already knew it was going to be shit to deal with. But so, no, there are a lot of things that I have never been a pro-dom, and I'm really glad they're out there.
Yeah.
You know? I don't want to deal with all these people who say, gee, I'd like to try it once. Cool. You know, look it up on the internet. Find a pro-dom. I'm not one of those. You come over, you order from the menu, and then you leave. No, thank you very much. So.
Well, what is it? What is it that you feel that you're truly passionate about?
I am very passionate about the fact that in this community, three things attract me more than anything. Number one, there is no should I, shouldn't I, will I, won't I. The cards are on the table from the get-go. By the way, I'm not ignoring you.
No.
The cards are on the table from the get-go. This is the page I'm on. If it's the same as the page you're on, then we can go somewhere. If we're not on the same page, God bless, goodbye, leave me alone. I'm a big girl. I can put on my big girl panties and walk away. So I like that. I don't like all the pussyfooting and the not being open and honest and the stuff. That is tedious for me. The second reason I really love this lifestyle is because it's based in trust. We start out, well, let me not speak for other people. I start out in my relationships in this scene where a lot of married couples don't even get to after 5 years because full disclosure is really important.
Amen.
I don't care if you're an axe murderer. If you're my brother and you're an axe murderer, tell me so I can get to the best attorney going. Don't lie to me and then have my legs cut out from under me in the middle of the courtroom. So, you know, full disclosure, transparency, open and honest, that trust level is just so wonderful. And the third reason I love it is because it's a win-win. I love having my feet rubbed. You love rubbing my feet. Everybody gets what they want. What's not to love? Oh, my God.
So true.
And to be able to share that with people and to be able to help them accept themselves at whatever level that is and to be true to themselves, whatever that means, is really exciting for me.
How do you feel about this influx of kind of kink curious people because of things like 50 Shades?
As long as we don't talk about 50 Shades.
I'm just saying this influx, because there is an influx of kink curious people into the lifestyle and dungeons and whatever because of this. It's now kind of being put into the mainstream.
But so there's two types. There's the people who are genuinely curious because it's something that they feel inside of them that they want to explore. And then there's those.
The looky loos.
Yes.
Right.
Taking a step back to when I started in the scene, by the time someone walked through the doors of Threshold, which happens to be my home dungeon, the first organization that I joined, and I was not going to join. I went to an orientation really resistively. A friend says, no, come on, let's go. And I said, well, all right, I'll go, but I'm not going to join. And then it was, well, all right, I'll join, but I'm not going to do anything. And at this point, I've held every office in the organization except treasurer. But anyway, so by the time someone walked through the door at Threshold, they had already gone through so much to try and find us. They were practically already vetted. The internet is the best thing and the worst thing that has ever really happened to us. Because, yes, great, wonderful, it's easier to find us. But there's no process. There's no getting your feet wet. There's no paying a little bit of dues. There's none of that before you walk in. And my biggest pet peeve is you see it done last week, you're doing it this week, and you're teaching it next week. And I want to tell you that I work really, really hard to walk away and keep my mouth shut and not kill people because I find that totally offensive.
Yeah.
Totally offensive. I think it's great if you want to play, and I think it's great if you think that after you've seen it done once, you can play. And if there are people who are willing to trust you enough to do terrible things to their bodies, far out. But to stand in front of a group and say, now you know how and you're going to teach it, not acceptable to me. So, I appreciate the sincere searchers. And new doesn't necessarily mean young. Certainly there's an attitude among the young where so much in technology puts things at their fingertips instantly. And there's a sense of instant gratification that they are not necessarily responsible for. But new can also be older folks who are new and who have that same kind of attitude. So I'm not trying to make this an ageist thing. Really, I'm not. Most of the time, I'm not. So if you want to learn, if you want to come, if you want to watch, and God knows there's place to just come and watch party after party. All those exhibitionist sluts want to have voyeurs around. Yeah. It's no problem for you to just come and watch. You're encouraged to come and watch. And little by little try. And there will be folks like me out there who will, you know, lay our toys out and use it as kind of a hook to bring in new, unsuspecting, you know, virgins. Oh, would you like to feel? Oh, here, let me show you how this feels on your hand. Oh, would you like to feel it on your back?
I've seen you do that.
Yes, I've seen her do that too.
Oh, there goes Ms. Dealey at her toys.
She does it so methodically too.
So I love those who are seriously interested in saying, you know, this has caught my eye. I've wanted to do this. I haven't known where to go now. I've found somebody. I found a munch. I would love to mentor with someone. Those are really important words to me.
Yeah.
But when someone says, I'm here, oh, I can do that, and then they start doing it and teaching it, and some of the stuff we do is not the most, some of it is a little dangerous, and some of it is a little edgy, and there are safety factors that have to be taken into consideration. If you're playing with fire, it better not be in a room that's surrounded with drapes. Use your use your head, you know. So, you know, and don't do it when you've been drinking.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I have some old fart issues.
I don't think those are safety issues, and we preach safety all the time. You know, it's important, you know, and I see what you're saying about there is a definite generational issue where there's this idea of I've researched it, I've seen it, I took a class, I should be able to do it, I should be the master of it, and then I can teach it. And there's a lot of that, and and I'm not one to judge. I know that there's some people that I remember I went to a class one time and somebody said it was a whip class. And they said, look, they practiced like every day for hours for 6 months before they ever used a whip on somebody. And I can respect that.
Yep.
And that's, and some people I know can practice every day, you know, for 2 months and feel that they are adequately skilled enough. Everybody's different. I'm not going to say everybody has to do something for 6 months before they're, you know, equipped enough to do it on somebody else, you know. And that's, I respect people that understand their own limits and their own abilities. At the same time, there are certain things you have to have a partner to do. But you should be educated by somebody, in my opinion, before you engage in them. Like I was lucky. I've had a couple mentors that literally they would show me on a person things like needles, sutures, CBT, those kinds of things that I'm, trust me, you don't want somebody just say, hey, it's my first time. Can I just poke you? No, you want, hey, it's my first time and my mentor's here. I'm going to poke you first and they're going to teach me how to do it. And that's how I'm going to learn. And that's to me a little bit more acceptable because you have to have a person there. It just doesn't work without.
And isn't it nice to learn how to do it without piercing yourself with a needle that's already gone through somebody else's skin and those already sudden blood transfer.
Right.
You know, the whole issue of cross-contamination, certainly things are better than they were, say, 20 years ago, but there are still issues that we cannot ignore.
Right.
And if you're not worried about HIV, be worried about Hep C, for God's sakes. You know, and again, that's another reason that I like the whole trust issue and transparency. We exchange medical histories. We have tests and share the results of the tests with the people that we are playing with. We know that I was taught to take care of my toys. My mom told me, if you break your toys, you don't get to play with them again. So I want to preserve the well-being of my toys, who happen to be, you know, living, breathing
people.
Things. Yeah. So those things become really important to me. And I sure as hell want them to feel the same way about preserving my well-being. I mean, I plan to live to be 127. I figure I'll be rowdy till I'm 120, and then I'll do the talk show circuit the last few years. You know, by then I will have outlived everybody. I can tell lies through my teeth, and there won't be anybody around to criticize
me. I like this plan.
And then my friends say, you know, even if you told the truth, they wouldn't believe it, so what's the problem? So, but no, I mean, I have no interest in checking out before my time. And when it's my time, I'll be happy to go. But, you know, until then, they're going to have to shoot me to get me to lie still in my coffin, you know.
That's true.
Yeah, I like that.
So as you've grown in the community, I'm really curious to know has there been like any regrets? Anything where there was, in terms of your growth and I mean, through everything?
I guess in the beginning, oh, wow, God. You know, I used to be really nice. I mean, I knew that I was stronger than most of the people I was spending time with, most of the guys I was dating. I would know that a relationship was over like months before they did. But I would wait and let them break up with me because, you know, we were taught that, you know, male egos are very fragile and you have to be and there were a lot of times when, you know, being really nice and not being self-assertive or trying not to be self-assertive didn't always get you the best treatment. Since I became a raging bitch, I am treated like a queen. You know, I mean,
it's so true.
I mean, I don't mind being treated like a queen, but occasionally I go, well, why did I have to go all the way to bitch before I got treated that way? Yeah. And sometimes that's a regret because I still like being a nice person, you know, and sometimes people go, oh, Miss D, you're so nice. And I go, oh, shh, not so loud. You'll ruin my reputation as a bitch, you know.
People will stop respecting me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so there is that regret, the fact that there are times when the persona is more important than the person sometimes. And, you know, some of the regrets that I have are not isolated to the scene. They're regrets about how people walk through the world unhappily or uncomfortably or dishonestly with themselves and consequently cost them all kinds of benefits. That, I mean, the universe is generous. The universe wants to give you what you ask for. But give the universe a chance. Don't say, I want a man or a woman or whatever. The universe will give you a man or a woman who's an alcoholic and out of work. Well, you weren't clear. You weren't specific. you just said, I want a man or I want a woman. You got it. The universe did what you asked, but you didn't ask clearly enough. And so sometimes I think we are very cavalier about what we settle for or about what we decide we're going to want or about taking on other people's ideas of what is ideal for us, you know, married, 2.5 children, station wagon, when in reality that's not what we wanted at all. And so I wish that people could be more in touch with who they are in the scene as well as in the vanilla world, so that they could get more of what they wanted as opposed to what they think they want.
I see that there's always this kind of like, well, there's a scene and then there's my vanilla life. And people have a really hard time kind of realizing that a lot of those ideals that you use in the scene are, they're not specific to just the scene.
They
can be translated everywhere else.
Well, I make the same demands of, not that I date a lot of vanilla people. there are a number of them who want to be in my life, and I love them dearly, but it's just, vanilla doesn't cut it for me anymore.
I
can't go there.
That's too far in the rear view mirror.
Yeah, but I have the same demands of them. You know, one man who was enamored of me, and when I first met him, had a drinking problem. For 2 years, I refused to see him again. He would call, we would talk, I would, you know, be concerned, happy holidays, you know, I hope you're well. It wasn't until he joined AA and was 1 year sober that I decided that I would see him again. Now, I give him credit for hanging in there and for persevering and for understanding that that's not going to be in my life and I won't have smokers in my life. I'm sorry, I just don't want to be around it. It's not wonderful for me. I keep teasing potential submissives by saying, you know, I do have ways of helping you learn how to quit smoking. Of course, they're not authorized by the American Cancer Society, and you may find them a little difficult, but, you know, the idea of being tied down for 3 days with a catheter and a bedpan, you know, that's...
I like this. Sounds like fun.
It does something. So, but the qualities that you see in people that you would date, is it any different from the qualities that you want in a potential submissive or slave?
No. I know what I want in the people that I want around me. I want strength. I want intelligence. I want creativity. I want honesty. I want a sense of humor. And I want that male, female, purple, green, blue, inside out, upside down, kinky, outlaw, or whatever. That's what I deserve, and that's what I want. And I'm offering that in return. And as long as I'm offering that in return, I have no compunction about expecting that back. Now, if I were duplicitous, if I were deceitful, if I were not willing to put on the line what I was asking, that's a whole other animal, and that's not who I am. But no, I expect that, and I get it from my family. You know, those are the kinds of people I grew up with. I'm out to my family. My sister rolls her eyes. I'll tell you, it was so funny. She was more freaked out by the fact that I was dating a guy 25 years younger than I was than she was that I was kinky.
Sounds like my sister. Yeah.
She went, your nephew's that age. How could you go? Leave me. You know, it was just
yeah, my sister's more freaked out that I'm dating a guy that looks like my ex-husband more than the fact that I'm kinky.
Oh,
yeah.
How funny.
So, yeah. I think that a lot of the things, I mean, number one, I could sit and listen to you talk, Ms. D, all day, because your philosophies mirror a lot of my own, and it's so nice to know. I mean, it's like, oh, this is self-affirming. This is reaffirming. This affirms my own existence that I was like, wow, I feel like I'm on the right track, you know, like I'm really doing the right thing. And I think that it's funny how I can see this kind of openness and this honestness, and I seem to see it more in the kink community than in the vanilla world. And I think that my opinion is that there's a lot of people that seem to hide a part of them. I think that in the vanilla world, it's more accepting to just kind of keep your dark side in a closet that nobody needs to know about. That's for private time. Whereas in the kink world, it's all open. Everything is. You're a little bit more willing to share and expose these parts of you, whereas you aren't when you're vanilla. And I can understand that. It's a freaky world, but that's just one of my opinions.
Yes and no. Let me give you an example. I used to do nude therapy. When I was a therapist, we would do groups that would be done in the nude. Premise being, when you don't have the designer clothes and the labels and the armor, you know, you could deal with people more people to people rather than label to label or bank account to bank account. However, there were always those folks who, sitting there stark naked, still had 6 feet of armor around them and never revealed who they really were. Yes, I think we have a preponderance of people who accept the potential for openness and honesty and being able to put it out there and being accepted in an alternative lifestyle for your alternatives. But there are still people who can be using their kink openness as a mask for being deceptive, being dishonest.
Absolutely.
There are people who, it's like in theater, which is another of my loves. In early on in my experiences in theater, there were a lot of alternative lifestyle people that were attracted to theater. There were a lot of gays who were attracted to theater. There were a lot of people outside of the mainstream who were attracted to theater because it was a tolerant community. We accepted, as long as you did your job, as long as your talent was out there, as long as you were working for the production, the rest of it was irrelevant, and you were accepted for what you contributed to what we were doing jointly. And I think that we also can attract some of the people who are walking wounded, who are not necessarily open and honest and stable and doing things for all the right altruistic reasons. I think that there are people who are abusive, who use dominance, male and female. Let me not be a sexist. I mean, as well as not being an ageist, I don't want to be a sexist. But I think that there are people who abuse their positions as when wearing the label dominant, and who can be less than ethical, in my opinion. Let me hit another interesting little sidelight. I know we are told in this community to not be judgmental. You know, everybody's kink is their own. Well, let me tell you this. We are fucking judgmental. We just don't verbalize it all the time. But there's no way that you can watch something and not be judgmental about what you're seeing, especially if it is way outside of your comfort zone, especially if it's way outside of my safety zone. I mean, I am judgmental all the time. I don't verbalize it, and I don't demand that everybody has to do it my way, but I'm willing to own up to the fact that, yes, I am judgmental.
Yeah, no, I can. I mean, I get on my soapbox about how, you know, we shouldn't judge it because that's their thing. But at the same time, it's like, look, that's their thing. I'm not comfortable with it, you know, which I suppose in that statement I've made, I've passed a judgment, but I don't want to verbalize my judgment to hinder their kink. That's my thing is, look, I can be not comfortable with something, but I don't have to do it. That's my thing. But I suppose that's still just as judgmental. It just makes me feel better about myself.
That's key.
And, you know, and sometimes there's an advantage for having been around so long that you are the old fart on the, you know, in the room, and people will tolerate a little more from me than they might from someone else. And I do try to make whatever judgments or whatever comments I'm going to make, I try to make them diplomatically. I try to be open and honest about it without having to be, you know, biting and caustic. And I think there are ways of doing that. Most of the time, people respond well to me. But, you know, if they're, honey, I've got a target on me, both sides, front and back. I mean, it's huge and enormous. And there are people who happen to love those targets. And you know what? I'll get over it. In the great cosmic scheme of things, it's not worth getting my pantyhose in an uproar.
That's true. That's true.
Like, I'm like mesmerized.
I know, right?
You're so cute. Just like,
what is she going to say next? What is she going to tell us about?
What's she going to talk about? So what's kind of your like favorite kink? I know it's a hard question.
The one that makes you giggle like an excited little girl.
I don't know if there are any of those.
Maybe because I giggle like an excited little girl.
I can't remember the last time I giggled like an excited little girl. Oh my God. Jeez. You know, I used to cavalierly say, people would say, well, what are you looking for in a submissive or slave? And I said, well, I'm really only looking for two things, total obedience and abject adoration. I figure if they're in place, everything else just follows. And then I realized I really wasn't quite so cavalier in saying that. I really absolutely did want total obedience and abject adoration.
I find the abject adoration is much easier than the total obedience.
Well, I find that, you know, they do go hand in hand, though.
Sometimes obedience can be a challenge.
When you threaten someone who adores you abjectly with removal from your space, obedience is very quickly following in, yeah. You know, there you go. So, I mean, and I love that energy. I love knowing that you want to rub my feet because you want to rub my feet.
Right.
If I found out, and people know, if I've spent some time beating you, when we finish, my aftercare is you're going to be rubbing my feet. Okay. I mean, after I take care of you, then you have to take care of rubbing my feet, you know, lotioning my feet. If I found out that you hated rubbing my feet, I wouldn't let you. As much as I love it, I wouldn't let you, because all of that ill will is going to come through your hands and into my feet. And God knows I don't need any more shit in my life than happens naturally. But when I find someone who loves doing what I love having them do, oh my God, it's better than sex, ice cream, and Christmas.
Ugh. That's the reaction I was looking for, right?
Right? It's true, though, you know, I mean, the knowing that there's some another half, you know, that somebody enjoys to receive the pain that I love to give is like, really? I can do this? And it's okay? I get so excited, like really excited, because I'm always like a dog on the chain. For me personally, I'm always a dog on a chain, because it's like I know I can go farther and be more sadistic and whatever. And it's like, I never get to take the dog off the chain because nobody can take it. Nobody can take what I want to dish out. So if there's those moments when I can like let the dog off the chain, it's like Christmas and ice cream, falling in love.
I have a number of people whom I consider playmates. They are not my submissives. They are not in service to me. But whenever we're in a dungeon together and we've got the time, you know, we haven't already booked our dance cards, we are definitely going to be playing. There's this one guy, oh my God, he is just so hot to play with. He's the only person who ever started to drool when he saw my barbed wire flogger.
Oh,
wow.
Yummy, yeah. And he, I remember once I was playing with him at the dungeon, and I was doing a, do you know what a zipper is?
Uh-huh.
Well, I was using a cargo net zipper, where you put the cargo net around the person and you use the clothespins to pin the cargo net on various parts of the body. And he was so tight and so firm. I said, I can't find any place else to put these clothespins. And he says, well, ma'am, you haven't put any on my cock and balls. Oh, my God.
And your heart
and
started
singing. You're right, I haven't. Let's see if we can repair that. Meanwhile, everything in the room has stopped. People are around the room. They're watching. As I'm putting this on the cock and balls, people are crossing their legs.
And when pussies.
When I grab the cargo net and I'm going to pull it all off in one fell swoop, right?
Mm-hmm.
I grabbed it and I pulled it, and there was this collective from everybody in the audience. And he kind of, his knees kind of buckled, and he went down, and his head was down, and he came up with this beatific grin on his face. Oh my God!
Thank you, mistress.
Oh yes, exactly. And on the way home, he says, you know, that was almost better than an orgasm. Oh, be still, my beating heart. Is that not hot?
Right?
Oh.
You know, and that's the great thing is that you get, I mean, that kind of, you know, opposite kind of joy for what they receive. It's just, oh, see?
My definition is that submissives get endorphin highs and dominants get adrenaline rushes.
Yep. Exactly.
That's my definition.
Yeah, when I try to describe top space and subspace to people, I go, top space is like being on coke and subspace is like being on pot. That's the best way. And anybody who's done either drug is like, oh, okay, like they get it immediately. If they haven't done it, they don't get the reference.
Yeah,
Or it could be heroin for the, you know, it depends on it. Okay, so it could be, and the way somebody
people
said to me,
people are gonna start thinking that you've done all these drugs with how you describe. Well, this is like that. You
whatever. Anyway, so top space is like drinking 12 pots of coffee, and subspace is like, you know, like the most mellow drunk you could be.
See, how's and I'm that? The kind of person who can drink a pot of coffee and go right to bed, and it won't keep me awake.
I'm getting there.
They haven't invented the thing that can keep me awake.
But you're right. It's adrenaline versus endorphins, and it's completely opposite. I look at people in subspace, and I was like, wow, they look so happy. Well, I'm still happy right here where I am, talking a million miles a minute, like that. So, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
Have you ever bottomed?
Never.
Ever no desire?
Honey, I am so not submissive, even my hair won't curl.
I get that, but then I know a lot of people that are like, oh, you know, Jill, we'll see. But
because there's the difference, of course, and there's bottoming and then there's submitting.
Agreed.
So that's, I guess what she's trying to say is there's never, ever been a time, not even in just experimenting, that you would ever be on the receiving side.
Well, no, that's not entirely accurate. I have some friends in the scene. There are a couple of gay guys I've worked with, and I had a couple of shoulder issues, and I said, you know what? I said, why don't you go ahead and do a flogging? It was obviously with a controlled situation.
Yeah.
And it was like a massage, and it was wonderful. And he flogged my shoulders for a while. I said, thank you. And that was fine. I don't have to have someone cane me to know what a cane feels like. Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, and God knows, I don't have to have somebody single tail me, because learning how to single tail.
I've single tailed myself.
I dressed like a hockey goalie. I got so tired of beating the shit out of myself. It was awful. Now, I'll tell you, that is one toy nobody should ever pick up without lots and lots of training.
Oh, yeah.
You can pick up a flogger. I mean, you might be able to do a little bit of damage, but the amount of damage you can do with a flogger is not anywhere near the damage you can do with a single tail.
Right.
To you, to them, and anybody else around you. I mean, that's a dangerous toy. Dangerous piece
of equipment. Oh, yeah. I've I've hit myself with my single tail. I have one that I still won't play with because it's a Valentino spring loaded, and it just keeps the way I hit it. Because I'm used to, I have this dragon's tail that I love that's very heavy. So it takes a lot of shoulder and I need to really swing it. But this Valentino whip, it springs back and it fucking hits me in the face every goddamn time. And so I'm like, literally, I play with it and I practice it and I just put it away. I was like, and I've never used it on another human being because I can't control it. So I won't use it until I can control it because that's just stupid. Don't be stupid.
I agree. As I said, don't break your toys.
That's right.
What is your favorite toy?
Oh, no, that one I can't answer.
You know, it's like picking a favorite child.
Yeah, no, it's like, you know, what do you like better, rubies or emeralds? You know. All of the above.
Sapphires?
All of the above. That too. But diamonds. Well, diamonds are for sure. Diamonds are on the top. Oh, I have to tell you a little story. I don't have to, but I'm going to.
Please.
One of my very first submissives was such a puppy dog. He was so eager. He was so bound and determined to please me. Not a bad quality at all. So he would walk around with a pad and pencil. And whenever I said I liked something or whenever I said, oh, yeah, that's my favorite perfume or whatever, he would write it down. You know, so he kept making this, accumulating this list. He found out that gardenias were my favorite flower. He didn't come to my door the first time he came over with a gardenia. He came over with a little gardenia bush, and then he went in the backyard and he planted it for me.
Aww.
He was definitely a keeper. Pissed me off when his company transferred him out of state and I had to give him his freedom.
That's
but anyway,
sad.
Yeah, it was. But we were together for quite a few years. Anyway, so we were talking one day and I said, oh, and on your list you have to put diamonds. And he said, oh, ma'am, he said, I can't afford to give you a diamond. I said, I'm not asking you to, but if you're going to be compiling a list of the things that I love, diamonds have to be on the list. It's my birthstone and it's my favorite stone. So about 8 months into our relationship, he came up to me and said, may I ask you a question? And I said, yes. He said, I would very much like to get a tattoo if you would give me permission. And he said, I'd like it to be a diamond so that I could be your diamond.
Aww.
Well, now how can you say
that's
no
so
to
cute.
That? You
know?
So I said, okay, but I'm going to design it. So it's a round faceted diamond with the point down. And on one side of the point, it's capital M, small s, period. And on the other side of the point, it's capital D, apostrophe, small s. So it's Ms. D's diamond.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know. It was so cute. But I mean, seriously, at that point, you are compelled to say yes. There's just no option.
No, you want to mark your body with my name? Certainly. I would not say
my
name.
My logo.
Wow. That's adorable.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love the single tail. I love my floggers. I love CBT. I love sounding. I love needles. I enjoy electricity, but sometimes, and I love hot wax, but I only love hot wax when I've got a sub who loves hot wax, who's going to do all of the melting, all of the draping, all of the cleaning up.
It's a lot of work.
You know, it is. It's
a lot of work.
It's a chore, and I'm not going to do it if I'm the one who has to do it. And I'm more than happy to own the fact that it needs to be done in a way that makes it easy for me. Thank you very much. That's the way I want my world designed, to make it easy for me. But I'm not a real stickler for things. For example, if I say I'm going to need my car at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning and I want it to be clean, I don't care whether you wash it or whether you take it to the car wash. I just want to be in a clean car at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I'm not going to say, and you have to do it, and it has to be done naked. And I'm, you know, especially since it's in the front yard and you can't do anything naked in the front yard. In the backyard, you can.
They get picky about that.
Yeah. Yeah. My neighbors are already a little, you know, they're very tolerant. I live in a wonderful neighborhood. Thank you. But I just wouldn't want to do that to them.
They already see the comings and goings of Ms. D.
Yeah, yeah. Wild and woolly.
How many, what's the most number of subs you've had at once?
You know, that's not an easy question to answer to this extent. There are bunches of people who think they're my submissives.
I'm asking you the question.
I don't think of them as my submissives.
Well, and I'm asking you the question because I know the amount of work it takes as a dominant to have one that you would consider your own submissive. And whether somebody considers that or, but it's you, the one that you are putting, the ones that you're putting the work into.
I think that the most I've had at any one time in specific service to me is two. My ideal, my fantasy, you want my ideal fantasy?
Yes.
My ideal fantasy is three perfect submissives living in the house next door. All of the playrooms are in the house next door. My house stays vanilla. They're within seconds of my beck and call and easy to get out from underfoot when I don't want to be bothered. And I have three because I care about them, because my needs are, you know, a lot. And it would kill one person to have to try and meet all of my needs. So by having three, I let them take shifts. And I'm really doing that for them. So that's my ideal vision.
I like this.
But I would say, too, I have had a number of playmates at the same time.
Yeah.
I have had, there are people in the world who, whenever I'm there, are immediately in service to me in that time and place, but not beyond that. I don't do long distance cyber or telephone domination. If I'm a hands-on bitch. So the fact that, now, this first sub, the one that has the logo on his ass, occasionally he will come back into town and I will see him. But that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
And that's a very separate thing. But generally, when it's time for you to be released, it's time for you to be released. I had one sub who said he wanted to try his hand at being dominant. He would want his own submissive. And I said, fine, I release you. He said, but that's not what I'm asking. I said, no, but that's what you're getting. Because the minute you are shifting out of full-time subspace, you are no longer mine.
Very true.
I'm a purist in that way. Other people can have multiple levels, and they can have subs who have subs of their own, and that's fine. They're entitled, but not for me. Thank you very much. And I get to design it my way. Burger King said I could have it my way.
Mm-hmm. And you're the queen, whatever they want to call you. Wow, but this is
a
great hour.
I don't want this hour to end.
I know. I know. I could sit and talk to her for, and even afterwards, I was like, so with all these questions that are coming in my head. This has been great. I really thank you for your candor and for your, you know, your just openness and your perspective on life.
Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking.
I know. I know. This was so difficult for you to break out of your shell and come and speak to us.
I loved it. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
I'm sticking to my statement that this was the best way to break in the new year.
Yes, I agree wholeheartedly. I'm really glad that we could do that this week.
Thank you.
Of all weeks. Our premiere episode of 2013.
We have things that are coming up in the year, just stuff that we're planning on, people that we want to have on.
Yes.
And I mean, we were looking at the shows that we've done in 2012, and I mean, we had such
a lot of variety.
Yes. Yeah. Variety of guests, variety of topics, and you know, everything from like really basic stuff to really philosophical conversations.
Yes.
And a lot of personal disclosure kind of stuff.
Yes.
So I can't imagine that this year is going to be any different.
No, I mean, we were talking about doing live broadcasts from the GRU.
Yes.
Which would be fantastic for those people that know this Gray Dancers Rope-tastic Unconference Extravaganza, which is like a kinky conference, but it's an unconference, so you don't really have an agenda. You just make the agenda up there, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a lot that's coming up this year. And next week, we're probably going to do our 2012 in a review.
Yes.
So we'll kind of talk about that, which will be fun, even though I won't be here. We'll be taping it because I'll be in Boston mm-hmm. next week. But I really wanted to say thank you again to Misty.
You're welcome.
Wonderful. I mean, I would have you on again for Absolutely. Anything because it's been fantastic.
Thank you.
But I'm Insidious Muse.
And I'm Service Slut.
And you've been listening to The Love Bite.
Bye.
Bye.